Radio Prague News.
The Prime Minister has said he has proof that last year's presidential elections were manipulated by people close to the opposition Social Democrats. A vote in the Czech lower house on the controversial US missile defense radar has been deferred by the government amid fears that it could be rejected. And the Czech Republic is to sell some of its redundant carbon credits to Japan in a deal amounting to 10 billion crowns. Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek told Parliament on Wednesday he had proof that last year's presidential elections were manipulated by people close to the opposition Social Democrats. The Prime Minister said that the people behind the manipulation were the former head of the intelligence service, Karel Randák, and Petr Dimon, who is currently head of PR in the Social Democratic Party. Mr. Topolánek said he was prepared to submit the evidence at a closed session of the lower house. President Václav Klaus won a second term in office in last year's presidential elections, beating challenger Jan Švejnar, a liberal economist backed by the Social Democrats and the Greens. At the time, the coalition and opposition accused each other of arm-twisting and underhand practices. Several deputies and senators received anonymous threats in the mail, and a Social Democrat MP was expelled from his deputies' group for voting with the other side. The Czech government on Tuesday temporarily withdrew two treaties on hosting a US missile defense radar from the lower house for fear that they could be rejected. The opposition Social Democrats were planning to force a vote on the treaties on Wednesday, taking advantage of the absence of several coalition deputies. The decision highlighted the fragility of the center-right government ahead of a vote of no confidence next Tuesday. The vote was called by the main opposition party after it emerged that the ruling party had attempted to prevent Czech television from broadcasting a report that would have discredited an independent MP who has been supportive of the ruling coalition. The Czech Republic is to sell some of its redundant carbon credits to Japan in a deal amounting to 10 billion crowns. Czech Environment Minister Martin Bursík, who was in Tokyo to arrange the sale, said the Czech Republic had received favourable conditions and the deal would be signed in Prague on March 30th. The proceeds from the sale will go to the State Fund for the Environment and will be used to support environment-friendly heating methods and co-finance the insulation of houses. The Czech Republic has redundant carbon credits thanks to a steep reduction of greenhouse gas emissions. The country pledged to reduce emissions by 8% but has managed to effect a 25% cut since 1990. Police have filed charges against a judge who was secretly filmed by reporters while accepting a bribe. Judge Pavel Naik has been accused of bribery, abuse of power and fraud, for which he could be sentenced up to 12 years in prison. A team of investigative reporters set out to trap him after one of his clients complained that he had asked for money in return for a verdict in her favour. Reporters discovered that the judge was deep in debt. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. A cold front moving across the Czech Republic is expected to bring an abrupt end to the mild spell. Day temperatures should once again drop to around 0 degrees and snow showers are forecast around the country. I'm Daniela Lazarová and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, the Czech government back on the ropes as it's forced to withdraw key treaties from Parliament. A second Michelin star for Prague as Gordon Ramsay's Mays restaurant makes the list, unfortunately just as Gordon himself pulls out. And the director of a documentary on the International Criminal Court tells us the permanent tribunal can achieve more if more states become members.
The International Criminal Court is going to operate whether or not the United States, Russia, China, or the Czech Republic join. But we hope they all will.
Also this week in Czechs in History, we look back at a famous Czech of the canine variety, Antis, the RAF mascot who came to symbolise courage for Czechoslovak airmen. Stay tuned to Radio Prague to find out more. The coalition government of Mirek Topolánek appears to be losing ground in the Chamber of Deputies, a day after a media scandal involving the Prime Minister's adviser. The opposition went on the offensive on Tuesday, saying they want to remove the government in a vote of no confidence. The coalition had to admit its weak position and withdrew votes on allowing a US radar base from the agenda in the lower house, fearing they would not muster the necessary support. Jan Richter reports.
Nearly halfway through the Czech presidency of the European Union, the country's government is on the ropes. On Monday, Czech TV broadcast a recording of Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek's right-hand man trying to convince a reporter to drop a story which could be damaging to a former opposition MP who now supports the coalition. Now the opposition has struck back, saying they would try and topple the government in a vote of no confidence next week. The Social Democrat leader Jiří Paroubek accused the government of resorting to mafia practices.
Metody premiéra Topolánka a jeho spolupracovníka Dalíka.
The methods of Prime Minister Topolánek and his associate, Mr. Dalík, have exceeded all tolerable limits of democratic society. We have witnessed further mafia practices of Mr. Topolánek's government and his collaborators. These have been an unacceptable intervention into the independence of the media and the independence of police investigation.
The coalition came under pressure in Parliament on Tuesday, with two of their MPs sick and two ministers away. The opposition took advantage of the situation and managed to attach the radar treaties with the US to the agenda, with good prospects of voting them down. The cabinet, with their backs to the wall, were forced to pull the votes. But Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek told reporters this was not the end of the matter.
To neznamená, že bychom na ratifikační proces rezignovali, protože můžeme...
This does not mean we will end the ratification process as we can return the material at any time. It means the approval of the treaties by the Senate is valid, and we'll come back to this after negotiations with the US administration and after the NATO summit in Strasbourg and Kiel.
Po jednání summitu NATO ve Strasbourgu a Kielu.
The vote of no confidence in the government is expected to take place on Tuesday. The opposition have failed to bring down the government on four previous occasions, but if they succeed this time, the country will be left without a government in the middle of the six-month EU presidency and some 2 weeks before an EU-US summit in Prague.
Jan Richter with that report. A welcome feature of the Prague metro system, its freedom from passenger turnstiles, is coming to the end of the line, it seems. The capital city transport authority says non-paying passengers are simply costing it too much and now wants to bring back the barriers, a former feature of the metro in the 1970s and early 1980s. Chris Johnson describes what's in store.
Prague's Transport Authority counts on reintroducing turnstiles to the capital's metro stations starting next year, with work completed on the barriers by 2012. The Back to the Future move is set to cost more than 2 billion crowns for the cash-strapped and highly subsidised authority, but it believes that the measure will quickly pay off by forcing free-riding Czechs and tourists to pay up. Transport company spokesman André Pechiny outlines the problem.
It is generally said that there is some 10% of amount of people that are not paying in the system of public transportation. But from some case studies we have from foreign countries, for example France, Moscow, for example, it is obvious that the amount of percentage is much bigger, so it means around 20-30%, for example.
But the idea has been given a mixed reception on the streets of Prague.
Já si myslím, že je to dobrý nápad, protože se nebude moc cestovat.
I think it is a good idea because you won't be able to travel without paying. Nonetheless, it will have a negative effect on many people because a lot of people, how should I put it nicely, get round the system by traveling for free.
Myslím, že to bude zdržovat. Že to bude zdržovat cestující a v podstatě to nic neřeší.
I think it will just slow people down. It will impede travellers and it won't solve anything.
But such are the numbers of metro freeloaders that the transport company says the move should pay for itself within 4 or 5 years.
And thanks to Chris Johnson for that. This Wednesday sees the publication of Michelin's Main Cities in Europe, a guidebook which each year rates Europe's best restaurants. Last year, Prague became the first city in the former communist Central and Eastern Europe to win a coveted Michelin star, thanks to the Allegro restaurant located in the Four Seasons Hotel. This year, the city retained its primacy and even improved on it, with a second star going to the Maze, until recently run by celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay in the Hotel Hilton. Jan Wellinger reports.
Two Prague restaurants, 2 1-star ratings. That's how culinary venues in the Czech Republic fared in this year's Michelin Guide, a guide revered by some, dismissed by others. In general, Michelin stars are highly coveted, and for good reason. Approval can significantly increase a restaurant's prestige and consequently its business. For that reason, Allegro, headed by Italian chef Andrea Cordi, will be pleased to have repeated its success. As for Maze, until recently, the restaurant found in Prague's Hotel Hilton was run by none other than Gordon Ramsay, but the celebrity chef pulled out of day-to-day dealings last month, negotiating a split with Hilton representatives. As a consequence, that has left some questioning the star's real worth. Pavel Maurer is a leading restaurant critic.
I think that the Allegro Michelin star is okay, but if we are talking about the Maze, the Gordon Ramsay restaurant, which was awarded, for me is a kind of, let's say, French arrogance to our market. Everybody who are interested in the gastronomy knows or known already that this restaurant practically doesn't exist last 3 months. From my point of view, on Czech gastronomy market, there is a lot of other, maybe better restaurants with a very good reputation. And I'm afraid that this award was influenced by the Gordon Ramsay name, which is known and popular and so on, because this restaurant had not enough time just to show and prove that they are good not only for several months, but for a long time.
Some sources reported that Mr. Ramsay was surprised by developments, but that the star chef, who has numerous business ventures around the world, will not be returning. The Hilton Hotel, meanwhile, said that the restaurant has not changed for now, but that it will announce a new concept and new head chef in the coming months. Whoever that person will have the formidable task of retaining Mace's reputation next year. Speaking of reputations, what about those who missed out? One Prague restaurant, La Dégustation Bourgeois Bohème, was widely seen as an easy favorite. Pavel Maurer makes clear that if it keeps up its current standards, it could easily be picked next time.
Point of evaluation is the local character of the restaurants. And I think that on our market emerged already some restaurants like Bateroir or Degustation Bourgeois, which are constantly focused to prepare foods from the local products. They are supporting biological products, and they also are refreshing old Czech typical recipes. And from this point of view, I think that they could be awarded as restaurants which helps to the gastronomy in our country.
Leading restaurant critic Pavel Maurer, ending that report by Jan Wellinger. Now, once again, we turn to the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries, which is currently running in Prague.
Silence has never helped or protected victims. Silence, it only helps the criminals.
That's the voice of prosecutor Luis Moreno Ocampo from the film The Reckoning, the battle for the International Criminal Court. The permanent tribunal was established in 2002 and was most recently in the news for issuing an arrest warrant for the president of Sudan, Omar al-Bashir. However, the court, based in The Hague, is not without its critics, and countries such as the US, China and Russia are not members. After a screening of The Reckoning on Tuesday night, Ian Willoughby asked its director, Pamela Yates, whether there was any evidence the existence of the ICC had deterred would-be war criminals.
When we started to make The Reckoning, The Battle for the International Criminal Court, I thought the film was going to be about trials and about arrest warrants. And I very quickly began to understand it was actually going to be much more about the effect of the court. What effect is the court having in the world? How is it trying to stop the culture of impunity? And I think there are some actually very measurable effects. First of all, it has brought a pretty sustained peace to Uganda, because the Lord's Resistance Army is afraid of the International Criminal Court. They're outside of Ugandan territory. They're hiding in the Congo. And they've created some havoc in the Congo. But in northern Uganda, things have been relatively peaceful. The court's overseeing of the paramilitary activity in Colombia is another one. Colombians are very aware that unless they impose their own rule of law, the International Criminal Court will come into their country. So I think it's had, in some ways, a measurable and some ways an immeasurable effect in the world. And some of that has yet to be determined.
But isn't the court fatally hamstrung by the fact that it doesn't have any kind of powers of enforcement in terms of arresting people?
That is the International Criminal Court's Achilles heel. But it also forces the court to build consensus among the member states. It forces them to act in the diplomatic and international community to make sure pressure is brought on the states to arrest, especially in the case of the arrest of President al-Bashir of Sudan. The international community must come together to pressure Sudan to give up al-Bashir.
The USA, like Russia and China, isn't a member of the ICC. The Bush administration was strongly opposed to it. Do you think that under Obama that may change?
I am really confident that our relationship to the International Criminal Court under President Obama will change. At the very least, we will re-engage with the International Criminal Court. We are going to be at the table. We'll be at the review conference in 2010. And we will have something to say about the direction of the court. Hopefully, also, the citizens of the United States will pressure our government to say, we want to be part of this court. We should be part of this court. Everything we stand for is what this court stands for.
But if the USA, Russia, China don't join, does it realistically have any kind of future, the ICC?
Absolutely. The International Criminal Court is going to operate whether or not the United States, Russia, China, or the Czech Republic join. But we hope they all will. We really need universal ratification. But as you see in The Reckoning, the court continues its work. It is unabated. It is having an effect in the world. It could have a greater effect.
Pamela Yates, director of The Reckoning, The Battle for the International Criminal Court, which has been shown in the One World Film Festival. By the way, the Czech Republic is the only member of the European Union that hasn't joined the ICC, while both houses of the country's parliament have approved ratification. President Václav Klaus has yet to sign the document. Coming up next, it's Czechs in History. Jan Wellinger pays tribute to a rather special dog.
Many countries have had famous war animals. One remembered in Great Britain this year was Antis, an Alsatian belonging to Czech airman Václav Robert Bozgech. 60 years ago, in 1949, the animal was awarded the PDSA Dickin Medal, the animal's Victoria Cross, for bravery and outstanding service during World War II. The dog and his owner, part of a 6-man crew, flew more than 30 bombing missions over occupied territory and Nazi Germany, evading formidable German defenses, always lucky to make it back. As his and his owner's fame grew, Antis went from being a valued mascot for his crew to a symbol of courage for all in the RAF. March 15, 1939, German troops entered Czechoslovakia and Hitler proclaimed Bohemia and Moravia a Nazi protectorate, reducing the country to a rump state. Many in the Czech Air Force began fleeing the country with a common purpose, to serve their country abroad. Among them was 27-year-old Czech airman Václav Bozgech. Like many of his compatriots, he escaped first to Poland, then to France, where he served in the Foreign Legion, and later as a flyer. It was on one of his missions over France that he found the dog. The moment is described in Freedom in the Air, a Czech flyer and his aircrew dog, by author Hamish Ross. On a line from Glasgow this week, the author told me there were two versions of the story.
The earliest version is a British newspaper of 1942 saying that in the month of March 1940, Vaclav came down, the aircraft came down, crash-landed in no man's land, deserted farmhouse, recently deserted, finds the abandoned puppy there, takes him. The second version is in Czech, in Roslet, in 1945, which says he bought him from a farmer. So I really don't know which is the correct version, but certainly the bonding between the two might suggest that it was something more dramatic than just getting him from a farmer. And that's certainly the version he subscribed to.
The airman escaped from France with the puppy in tow, eventually making his way to Great Britain. Although strict quarantine laws were in effect, he managed to smuggle his four-legged companion in. And as a result, the dog was raised and spent most of his life on air bases. Bozgich trained the dog well within the 311 Czechoslovak squadron, and their attachment was great. So great that ahead of one mission, the Alsatian, who could no longer stand being parted from his owner, stowed away on the plane. The C for Cecilia, the crew's Wellington bomber. Hamish Ross once again.
He was surprised to find the dog was not waiting for him as they boarded the aircraft. And off they went. He just assumed the dog had been in somebody's hut. You know, he wasn't worried because the dog was well known everywhere. There was no problem. As the plane was crossing the Dutch coast, about 12,000 feet, he felt this tap by his elbow. He thought it was the navigator asking for a radio fix on their position, but when he looked at the navigator was deep in his charts. And then he stared into the darkness and he saw, he couldn't believe it, the dog lying on the floor at his feet, and the dog's sides were heaving as he was trying to breathe. So it was a case of switching over the oxygen mask. It was a difficult raid. They had more than their fair share of enemy activity, and I think there was also lightning storms, and several of the radios and the electronics were put out of action. When they returned, and remember the Wellington had a crew of six, they decided that the dog had brought them good luck, and it was a collective decision on the part of six men. Antis would join the combat team.
Flying with the dog was, of course, strictly against regulations. Nevertheless, Antis took part in some 30 missions, bringing inspiration to his crew. Twice he was injured by flak, once a scratch to his ear and muzzle, another time a chest injury, far more threatening. Nevertheless, the animal's nature and training saw him behave exceptionally. It was only on their return from one such flight that Bozgich realized the animal had even been hurt.
There showed courage, you know, that perhaps a human being couldn't show. The dog did not panic. It did not whine about its wounds. It just lay at his feet. Field Marshal Wavell said in pinning the Dickin medal on Antis's collar, "You have inspired others by your courage and steadfastness." And that's a remarkable thing.
As the bombing raids continued, rumors of Antis's existence began to spread. They were, of course, denied at the official level, even though the dog's story became something of an open secret. Eventually, the truth came out. But rather than being an embarrassment for the RAF, Antis with Bomber Command became an inspiration for many. By then, his flying days were over, but a dog capable of braving dangerous flights through blinding searchlights and anti-aircraft fire as well as enemy fighters was a hero and a worthy mascot. As the conflict wore on, slowly the scales tipped in favor of the Allies. When the war ended in May 1945, it meant that Václav Bozgich and compatriots could soon return home. It had been a difficult 6 years of sacrifice, but now democracy in Czechoslovakia could be restored. But tragically, it would be short-lived. The country again descended into darkness in 1948, this time under the communists. Overnight, men like Bozgich, who had risked everything for their country and endured, became enemies of the state, and it was time, again, to escape. For Bozgich, that meant a personal tragedy. He left behind a wife and baby son. Hamish Ross again.
Of course, the thing to note from the start is, well, Bozgich couldn't possibly take a wife and a seven-month-old child out. He was not going to leave the dog behind. And that wasn't just sentimentality. He did feel that the dog could alert him to any danger in advance.
In fact, the dog was to play a pivotal role in the airman's escape, helping him and two others slip into West Germany. A group of strangers nearby in the dark was not so lucky.
The crossing spot was compromised. Searchlights come on. Machine guns from a fixed position start raking the ground, and these people are either killed or wounded. So they have to take a roundabout way, and the dog seems to be their guiding light in coming through and crossing to the border.
Boskiech never returned to the country of his birth. He remarried in England and founded a second family, but also he never forgot what he had left behind. It must have haunted him deeply.
They fought for not only the freedom of Czechoslovakia, but the freedom of the Western countries. Then in 48, when they fled again, those of them who were able to get out, there was just no hope left. There was just nothing. There was no intervention. It would be, in Bostek's case, for the rest of his life, a complete severance, separation from his homeland, the former family. And he made great efforts to keep in touch with his growing son, who is by now 10 to 12, and he kept in touch right up until Jan was in his 20s, usually having to send postcards and parcels at Christmas from different parts of the world with an assumed name. When I interviewed Jan in Prague, he said that as a boy what he loved were the stamps, the foreign stamps that put him in a special category.
As for Antis, Boskiech's famous dog, the brave Alsatian lived until the age of 13. After the animal died, Václav Boskiech never wanted and never had a dog again.
Jan Wellinger with Czechs and History, bringing us to the end of today's program. I'm Rob Cameron. I do hope you've enjoyed it, and do join us again soon. Goodbye.
Vím, že je tu všude tma, já ji nevidím. Vidím jenom to, že nevidím nic, když připustím, že vidím, měl bych vidět víc. Svou hlavu trup, dvě ruce, nohy nevidím, tak tam se poděl můj doposud dokonalý zrak. Na všem leží neproniknutelně modrý mrak, tmavo modrý mrak. Sám nevím ani kudy jít mám a kam. A to, že na hlavě tmavomodrý klobouk mám, to je právě klam. Nemám hlad, tak co mi naplat, že mi chutná.